This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 285 of the Countdown Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, have you ever done something once and like it turned out okay, but then you did it again and the shit was off the chain? That's kind of what we're talking about today. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to.
Damn right.
And today for episode 285, The countdown to 300 is almost here.
Oh yeah. Look at that.
Where are we doing, as Wayne has alluded, the top 10 sophomore films by director. Now... Wayne and I had a largely edited out conversation on last week's episode, which was it sophomore or was it sophomore? Now, Josh Ragland in the Facebook community, link in the show notes if you want to join, get involved in the conversation that happens there daily.
Hit it.
Said, basically, all Americans drop the O unless they're pretentious assholes.
So it should be sophomore.
Yeah.
Sophomore would be stupid.
Is the technically correct word? I'm trying to think of what an Australian equivalent would be.
The Australian equivalent. There's a place in WA, Western Australia, called Dunsborough.
Yep.
Now, if you said Dunsborough, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's probably sophomore.
There's also
a place. You're right. Sophomore.
There's also a place in our city called Innaloo.
Yes.
And when you say it properly, it's Innaloo.
Yeah. There's a place called Innaloo. Dude, there's a place called Cockburn.
There is a place called Cockburn. That's Coburn.
Yeah, right. And there's also a place called Upper Swan. Anyway, sorry.
And there's a place called Secret Harbour that's not very secret because we all know where it is.
Anyway.
Welcome to your guide to WA Travel.
Stay with us, people. Stay with us.
All right, well... we'll talk about the countdown proper when we get to that, but we kick off every episode with a segment that we call The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
What's up, Razula?
What is up is the result from last week's episode 285 poll for the top 10 hateable heroes / protagonists. And Wayne, finally, your shirking of the brief has caught up to you. Wayne basically just decided that anyone who was a protagonist who basically was on the side of goodness, and the listeners responded. And they said, well, you had 13 votes to my 33.
Oh, 13? I thought I had 10, cunt.
No, you felt well over the line. No problem there at all. Some of the feedback from the listeners. From Michelle Dodo, she said, my vote is for Paul because with him having Tom Cruise on the list, although it would have been A Few Good Men for her... and a big lol for Bella as my number one. Bella from, of course, the Twilight series. Smiley Samani, good friend of the show, said, Wayne cheated.
Yeah,
he did, Smiley. He absolutely did.
Oh, what a bunch of crap. Please go on.
That's it. Nicole Presley totally voted for you. She said, I feel like his characters are main characters. Nicole, I don't know what Wayne drugs you're smoking, but you need to lay off some of them.
You know, Nicole, it's people like you that make the world a great place.
She also felt that I was judging the actors. She did say, like, my pick of Shia LaBeouf for Sam Witwicky was a bit off the mark. Fair enough. That one I can understand. No,
I can understand all the
problem at all. I got a bunch of votes for going with Bond. So Philip Meany was one of the people that said that.
Okay. All right. go on.
Kristen Arcaro also said Paul for Bond and Bella. Now, a bunch of people gave me a bunch of shit about my interpretation of the aliens.
Please, let's talk about this. Okay, now.
I found them.
Okay, right. So just to recap, Paul. Mm-hmm. In the movie Aliens, Hudson, played by Bill Paxton, says when he's looking for some people on like the cameras
for the
on
chips
the feed,
in them, the PDAs, whatever.
Right. He says to the group who have their back to him, he says, stop your grinning and drop your linen.
Found
him, right? Yep. Paul seems to think that
is an illusion.
Is alluding to... him having a small dick.
Or him wanting to have sex and, hey, I found it, let's go.
Yeah, okay, now I'm going to take you up on this. It's got nothing to do with him having a small dick. He's just saying to women,
let's get ready.
Take your clothes off so I can put a load in you.
I found him. I guess it's two separate things. I can see how that could conflate it. However, people who seem to think that I don't understand that it's about them finding the Weyland-Yutani, not Weyland-Yutani, what's the place called? LV-426 colonists. I understand he found them. He was just then incorporating his sexual brand of humor some way.
Yes.
That's
what
I was going for.
Oh, okay. No, did people think you didn't get that?
I think so. I think
okay.
A few people
all right.
That
all right.
Dumb.
All right.
So, In other words, in Wayne's language,
bitch, please.
No, don't drag me into this, motherfucker.
You're on your own, small dick, fucking Bill Paxton.
Now, we also want to wrap up this week's recount. We've got a lovely message, both on the Patreon page and then also through the main website on Facebook. This comes from Melanie Damon. She said, "Hi, Wayne and Paul. My partner and I love your podcast. It's our all-time favorite podcast, and we just recently became patrons."
How kind.
"After this week's Hateable Heroes, can you please review," she asked to review, "Cobra Kai?" Now, we did that. I actually thought it was on Patreon, but I think we did that as part of the main show.
I think so, yeah.
And we did Karate Kid on Patreon. I'm not sure. We just did the first couple episodes.
Cobra, yeah.
Now, it's on Netflix now because YouTube Red or whatever the call is dead.
Is it?
Red's dead.
Premium. Oh, really?
Yeah, YouTube Premium, which became, yeah, whatever.
It's what? Gone. That's my favorite subscription.
Yeah, for the video side of things. I see. I think still the video, no ads, that's going no problem at all.
Fair enough.
So, lots of big love. And I replied back and then I got the most lovely reply from Melanie. I said, "Look, I think we've actually done some of that. So, check that out. If you still want us to do it, maybe we can watch a few more episodes or pick a different film instead." She just wrote, "Jeremy has just started, her partner, has started crying with happiness. He's the way in this relationship."
You know, there's some more people we could use in the world too.
So thank you so much for the prompt reply, et cetera, et cetera. And so thank you so much, Melanie. And it's great to have you as both listeners and patrons of the show. Thank you.
Real sweet.
And then another email from Danny Knett. I think I'm saying that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Danny said, "Hey guys, I'm from America. Please don't hold that against me. Lol. And I just started listening to podcasts and found yours while listening to another podcast. I love your show. The first time I heard Wayne laugh, I thought it was a soundboard recording of Mozart laughing from Amadeus." We've had that before. A couple people
I've had that in my life before. Yeah.
"It always makes me smile. Your real, true friendship reminds me of the friendship I had before my friend passed away last year." That's very
dog.
Sad. So sorry for your loss, Danny.
By the way, I love the USA.
Yeah. we both do, obviously. Yeah. Anyway, I just other than certain parts about your current... Premier. No, what's his name?
President.
Yeah, love American tell. Anyway, listening to the two of you always makes me smile. I often find myself arguing with both of you out loud, sometimes cheering out loud with your choices. That's exactly the purpose of the show. Please go keep up the awesome work so I can always count on you to brighten my day. Couple of final notes. Wayne, suck it up, buttercup. The soundboard is awesome.
Yeah, you had me up to there, Dan.
Eat my ass! Oh, fuck off. Eat all the asses, man.
That one was for Wayne, not for you, Danny. That's wonderful. Kirk is so much better than Picard. Better fighter, better tactician. And this is for Wayne. Better at romancing the ladies.
That's true. I don't recall Picard. Picard never put a load in a green alien lady. Mm. So there you are.
Picard
Fair
hasn't lived.
Fair to say.
And finally, listening to the Hated Heroes, you were discussing Adam Sandler. My brother-in-law used to work for him as part of his Happy Madison production company. Son? He makes everyone sign exclusive contract, so they cannot work on any projects except his, as long as they work for him. Kind of douchey.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
Golden handcuffs,
mate. Didn't ask Danny if we could read that out. Hopefully that's okay.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Did give his last name. Hang on, brother-in-law. Will it be a different... Yeah, different last names. All fine. No worries.
Excellent, brother. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Danny. We really, really do appreciate it. And thanks to you all for your support of the show. Let's get into it there on the other side of this music cue. The countdown of the week. The top 10 second soft... Oh, more... Oh, more...
Oh, more... Spent everywhere
too. Top 10 sophomore films by director.
I don't know what I'm going to put on the damn title card.
Better work it out before I name the episode before you send me the card.
We'll figure it out.
Is the topic of this week's countdown. Wayne, it's a simple brief in that it's second films, except we had to rule out certain things and include others.
All right, everyone, I can feel problems about to turn up. So,
I think this might be Wayne's way of saying he's going off.
No, motherfucker, I'm not eating a dick. Now, Paul sent me a text during the week.
I did.
And he said, so are TV films allowed because that would alter your...
Totally changes a couple of my choices.
Right. Now, I went, sure, I guess a TV film is a film, but I think by saying that, I may have... I don't know. I did as much research as I could bother.
I thought you were about to say, as much as I could possibly do, and I was just going to say,
hot damn!
That's a lie.
Well, only the fact that Paul said that makes me think that I'm sure I'll say this guy, and then he'll say that wasn't technically his third.
Don't worry, I'll be frantically Googling if I don't know off the top of my head.
All right,
check every one of your choices.
Look, Oh man, why you want to be like this in your life, motherfucker? All right. Anyway, I got strategies, but none.
This
really.
Was really hard though. Other than that, because I realized there's about 20 second
easily,
films which are
easily,
fucking amazing.
Easily.
Some of which are in my favorite films of all time.
Yes,
which kind of blew my mind. I really thought, well, this one, that one, that'll do, and then I'll be struggling to fill the list. Wrong.
I went a step further, and that would be that I. I'm sitting there going, there's probably, in my head, yours and my list up in the end of it is going to be quite similar.
They could be. I left out a couple that I know will be on yours that I thought, therefore I won't bother.
Yeah, but I'm also trying to make an interesting list for everyone.
Right.
I'm trying to make it like, well, maybe this isn't the less obvious choice, but I liked it because of this. So I got a few of those going on in here, but
okay.
I'm sure you're just going
to
Google.
If you listen carefully, it's Wayne politicking that 12 all.
I'm not politicking
not to go 13, 12
I'm trying
down.
To give you what, you know, some people call this producing a show. I don't know if you've heard of it, but whatever, motherfucker. I'm trying to put a good product out. Okay.
All right. Who wants to go first? Then,
you go first. All right.
I'm going first. My number 10. Boy, it's hard. This is how good my list is when this is at number 10. My number 10 is James Cameron's second film. It's The Terminator.
Okay, good. Not on my list?
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Totally understand. Second film after Piranha 2, : The Spawning.
Did you see that?
I think I did way back when.
You have, I'm sure. If anyone's seen it, it's you.
I've heard it's this god. I mean, I don't remember much about it, but how good can a film be about piranhas getting wings?
Is that what it is?
I'm pretty sure. Like, in this particular film. Like, they're, I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be misremembering. But anyway, we're here to talk about The Terminator, which is a seminal piece of sci-fi filmmaking. Obviously, it launched the entire franchise, which continues to darken our doorsteps until today. Though that's, I didn't mind Dark Fate at all. I know I'm in the minority there.
Yes, I thought it was. So I didn't mind Salvation, and everyone hates that.
Jeez.
Come on, it was great.
Next thing you know, you'll be telling me fucking Rise of the Machines is excellent.
You know what? I didn't hate it, but
Genesis.
I don't even know about Genesis. I can't even remember that shit. So fair enough on that one. You know what? This movie, me and my friends at the age of 6, I don't know, 10, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, 10 sounds more 10-ish, like
10-ish, right? We would walk around and say, fuck you, asshole.
Now, if you're like me, you've been absolutely floored by that statement. Wayne's swearing at an inappropriate age.
I was... we were quoting the televisor.
I understand you're quoting. Just that most people might be mortified to hear a 10-year-old walking around and saying, fuck you, asshole.
It's not I actually said it to people. We sort
but
of
for
said
Wayne,
it,
it'd be like...
No. We were saying it among each other, but it was kind of, fuck you, asshole. It was like that Parker's ad that we used to do, all right? Anyway. Really
did we used
on.
To do Parkers?
Well, there was.
Or did the kids of the day do Parkers?
The kids
that's
of the
a
day
bad
did
thing.
It. I've heard people.
Parkers.
Parkers. Sorry. Everyone's that's like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Cut.
It's a stupid Aussie commercial from 10 years ago. Yep. Sorry about that. All right. I hope you cut that out. I hope you cut that out.
No. I'm doing less editing these days. I only edit what I need to do to save the show. and also the bits in between where we to get tongue tied and
yes, all that shit.
The Terminator, look, as I said, seminal, made Arnold Schwarzenegger after Conan the Barbarian into the greatest action star of the 80s. Don't care a shit if you believe that Sylvester Stallone, you're wrong. It was Schwarzenegger.
There's a room for everyone.
And Terminator 2 is one of the greatest sequels of all time, and therefore Cameron went from strength to strength, and we all want to see it. No, we don't give a shit about Avatar 2, but anyway. He gets a pass of life, and so I will see it. Let's see
I'm
how it goes. That's my 10, The Terminator.
Cool. My number 10 is, goddamn, this is quite a bit of a contrast. It's The Breakfast Club.
Oh, yep. Was in my considerings
really?
In my top 20 honorable mention.
Look, I think we all know of The Breakfast Club. Let me tell you about this. It's pure... I don't know if it's just nostalgia or whatever, but
it holds up.
I love the shit out of that
movie. I watched
movie.
This movie again at the outdoor cinemas 2-3 years ago. Holds up.
About 5 years ago, amphitheater, that's going on. Me and the lady at the time go. Turns out all my friends turned up separately, and then there was pizza. It was this great night.
At that age, we were younger than the characters in the film, but...
Yeah.
But it resonated for us. I mean, so much that I remember one dude we went to high school with in year 9, like running down the corridor screaming, I want to be
that
an airborne ranger.
Ian Lennery. Yeah,
Ian Douglas.
Ian Douglas. Yeah no, he
sorry.
No, he would do that
sure
for like
he's
two.
A listener.
He's not. He would do it for like every day. And I was like, shut the fuck up. I'm going to trip that bitch up the sector and he runs past you now. So anyway, yes. Anyway, good one. The Breakfast Club is all I got to say. I just fucking love it.
My number 9 is a film which we made you watch for, I believe, a patron special not that long ago. It's Neil Marshall's The Descent. after his debut feature film.
Oh yeah, I remember Dog that.
Soldiers.
Oh, that was his second movie, eh? Yeah.
How good's that movie for a second movie? These films had that.
If you like that kind of thing, but yeah.
But I think even you appreciated it. It was a good film. It wasn't your cup of tea.
No, exactly. Yeah. It was well made, and I understand your thing about the ending and the US versus the UK, whatever version.
That's it. The story of a bunch of female spelunkers who go down into a catacomb of caves and end up getting trapped down there after there's a cave in with a bunch of things that live in the dark. Which
sounds
really straightforward, but I think the fact that there's... there is a clear hero, a clear heroine in this particular film, but the claustrophobia of the film...
Yes, very claustrophobic feeling.
...really works. The horror is pretty horrific. Like, when people die in this film, you kind of feel it because they're all established pretty well as characters and... It resonates. It really does. And so much so there's a few great jump scares, which this is a kind of film which lends itself to jump scares. They're not forced.
Even though I hate them, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. And Wayne sucked it up like a man and he watched it. And Jared, good friend of the show, patron of the show, and I quite enjoyed sitting there with him and subjecting him to it on Jared's home theater.
So. Yeah. Word to the wise, just by the by, don't get stoned and watch it and then feel claustrophobic in a big theater
room.
Okay, just maybe don't do that. Someone told me not to do that.
Someone.
There you go.
Wayne's conscience. Okay, good. That's my nine.
Okay, my number nine, bit unexpected this one. Lost in Translation, mate.
Oh, that is unexpected.
I really, really like this film, and it's one of the, like, Sofia Coppola, her second movie after, I guess, The Virgin Suicides.
Yep.
And because she's Frank Ford Coppola's daughter, there might have been some nepotism problems with, like, people saying, oh, is she really good, this, that. This movie blew it out.
Yep.
This movie blew it out. And this is probably this is definitely a career highlight for Bill Murray. Like this thing that he did, the movie.
Do you think this is more significant than Ghostbusters or Groundhog Day?
No, sorry. I would say a late career highlight.
Later career highlight, yeah.
Yeah.
This film, what, 15, 16 years old?
Around there, 2003.
Okay, yep.
So, yeah, he... because the movie is about this, you know, this famous-ish dude who goes to Japan and then he meets Scarlett Johansson and they have this not platonic kind of relationship, and it just becomes... It gives you the feeling that you have if you go to a new city and you can't speak the language and you don't know what's happening. It's that first night in that bar. Boom. Very cool. So, yeah, Lost in Translation.
Yeah, okay. That is a surprise. I didn't think that would be on your list, but I understand.
I've only seen that movie 3 times. It's weird.
Yeah, I watched it once. It's fine, but it's not my cup of tea.
No, and I don't know why it's my cup of tea either.
Lots of people love it, so totally understand. My number 8 is a film which I've come to really love. The first time I watched it, liked it a lot, was in my top 10. Oh, I think of the first year we did the podcast from 2015. I'm talking about Ryan Coogler's Creed.
I knew you'd have this on.
Creed is fucking amazing, man.
Creed's great.
It's one of the best 4K discs I've bought, and to watch, not in terms of transfer, but just in terms of the second viewing of this film, blew me out of the water. I was so invested and I was so along for the ride with the titular character as he tries to make a name for himself. And Michael B. Jordan's fantastic in it. The boxing sequences are incredible.
I actively shat my pants in that sequence where it was one shot and it was like, however many rounds. Or it was like, it just went, I was like, fuck.
Coogler is... I mean, this is his second film.
He's the real deal.
Fruitvale Station was great.
I never saw it, but
Fruitvale Station is a highly emotional film. Brought me to tears. You know, not that many films do that. It was in that list that we did, top 10 tearjerkers, a long time ago. But Creed blows that out of the water again. And whether or not you love Black Panther, I think it's an important film. It's still very good. Not as good as some of the other Marvel films, but better than most, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But this film is his piece de resistance as far as I'm concerned. It is head and shoulders by everything else he's done. I hope he can make other films like this one. It's one of the best sporting films ever made. Creed is my number 8.
Did he do Creed 2?
No.
Okay, cool.
I think he might have written it.
Okay.
But he handed off directed.
Creed 2 was fine.
It's fine. It wasn't as good as this. No one knew it was good as Creed. Yeah. I agree. Yep.
Nice one. My number 8 is Boogie Nights.
Yeah. Great choice.
Yeah? Okay, so Paul Thomas Anderson. I have a checkered history with this guy's stuff. Like, he's...
Oh, 100%. He's not really my type of filmmaker, but this film is great.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe how... It's about Dirk Diggler, a porno star in the 70s, and it's Marky Mark, and it's got, like, Burt Reynolds in it, and... It is set in the sort of 1977 porn scene, I'd say. And then...
Well, it starts in the 70s, it goes to the 80s.
Yeah, it goes all the way through. Quite an epic tale of, like, you know, this dude with a huge cock. And I always thought that it was kind of about John Holmes.
Yeah.
Like, is it that guy?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. No, it's not the same as his story.
I thought you were sort of, you know, projecting yourself into that role.
I mean, it's kind of poor to forget that I'm Asian, but cool. But why I was impressed with this film, first of all, is it
with apologies to all Asians listening
to
the show.
It's fine, I'm Asian, it's all right. Oh, shit. Okay. Okay, sorry. Yes, no. Why?
The show's gone, sorry.
I know. It's where it all went to hell. Sorry, let me just say this, all right? This movie is longer than D's Nuts, all right? And it's fucking like, it still is really good the whole way through.
Yeah,
Heather Graham's great. Mikey Wark is great. And even the big hump shot at the end of the big, huge cock, right? I remember being in the cinema with Paul and a couple of friends when that happened. And then it's like, final shot. Boom, dick, right? And I was like really shocked and didn't know what to do with it, right? Lights come up and I look over at those guys and all of them have grimaced like this.
To be fair.
Because we didn't know how to handle it, man.
We were like 23 years old.
No, we were like, it was fucking 20, yeah, what, 22
what
years
old. What year was this
whatever. Movie? 97.
Yeah, there you go. So we were 22, kids. Give or take.
Yeah. So, no, so we didn't know what the... Look.
Half a lifetime
look,
ago.
You can grimace at a cock in your life, all right? It's fine.
Yeah, but now I'll be like, okay. You know.
Oh, no, because we've seen lots of cocks. I've seen about 15
in
cocks.
In Wayne's case, more up close than others.
Yeah, I've seen about 15 cocks. That's too many, isn't it? That's too many.
You know, we have our preferences, but yeah, whatever. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess now we live in an age where it's way more okay for a cock to be on screen than it was 23 years ago.
I was talking about real life. It's definitely too many. It's definitely too many.
Time for the next level. Forced laughing.
Fuck you and your shitty sound, bitch. This would have been a good bit if you didn't fuck it up with this bag of shit, motherfucker.
I refer you to Danny's email.
Eat dick.
Suck
eat
it
all
up,
the dicks.
Buttercup.
Eat all the dicks in the world. All right, so please, that's the end of mine. Dirk Diggler, everyone. Boogie Nights.
So 2 minute discussion about Boogie Nights, 3 minute discussion about penises. That's about par for
it's
this
about
show.
The same thing, really.
All right, number 7 is a beloved film for us. I think it's the film that proved that the Marvel Cinematic Universe had legs, that it brought all the key players together for the first time, and it was Joss Whedon's second film. I'm talking 2012, The Avengers.
Slightly low.
Okay, slightly.
All right, but yes, excellent call. Good God. Hell yes. Shit.
For a long time, this was my favorite Marvel film. It's still right up there.
I know, man.
It's fallen off some people's radars.
Because it was surpassed, but for what it did, holy shit.
And that's what I'm saying. Okay, so we had Iron Man and we had the Hulk. And we had Thor,
yeah,
right. And so they had those three established, and then we're now going to bring them together in their own field, their team film. How is this going to work?
Exactly.
And it introduced in the background Thanos, which of course is played out in the way that we know. But Loki was a fantastic villain. Arguably, he was a bit neutered after this film, but still, it was great in this movie. And it's just exciting, and it's never dull. And it proved that cinematic universes, this is the film,
dude,
that changed the landscape for filmmaking from then until now.
But have you noticed this? Everyone has failed. Marvel is the only bugger who actually managed to do a cinematic universe that didn't suck or fail.
Whoa, hold on.
The Dark Universe from Universal.
Exactly. Even DC, the closest rival, couldn't get it done. And so now DC's gone the other way. It's like, well, we're going to do little noir sort of like standalone things maybe, you know? Like fucking the Batman.
Yeah, and, I mean, heaps of things have tried.
Yeah, but I think they're actually moving away from the serialized type thing.
I think Sony's going to persist with the Spider-Verse and the like.
Yeah, possibly. But everyone else, like you said, like, you know, they mostly fail. It's almost like Marvel is the exception, not the fucking rule.
Yep.
And I remember when they announced Joss Whedon was the director for the Avengers, I was like, yo, I get the geeks love him, and I know he's an excellent showrunner, but is he an actual good director? Won't it look like a TV show? That's what I thought. And then it turns out he's off the chain and managed to write some narrative which gives everyone kind of equal play. Which is almost impossible to do.
It does almost
kinda.
It does almost feel like a bit of a cheat to have this one in, because of course he directed so many episodes of television through Buffy and the like.
This is the one I thought there would be a problem with. I thought you were going to say, "Oh, Joss Whedon did some TV show movie."
I don't think he had. He'd done Serenity.
Yeah, Serenity is the only. That was the only other movie.
So it's technically his sophomore.
Okay, sweet. I'm glad this is in you.
That's the only problem you've got. Then your list is 100% kosher.
I don't. Yeah, well, we'll see.
All right, that was my 7. Over to you for yours.
Nice one. This is kind of it's landed here by chance, but it's satisfying to say my number 7 is 7.
Mm.
Yeah, 7.
It's my number 11.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
No, I'm deadly serious.
We almost crapped out. Yeah. Yo, David Fincher used to do a lot of work in commercials, and then he was an acclaimed music video director, and then he did this movie called like Alien 3 back in 92.
Yep.
I think I'm the only person in the world that doesn't mind it.
Well, he said the experience was so awful he vowed to never direct a motion picture again.
Well, thankfully he
reneged on changed that. His mind, and this one came along. Now, 7, so damn cool. And I think probably what got to me as
is
well
cool
is
cool the right word?
No, I well no
I don't think
because
it is.
Of all the bad. No, it was, man. It
was a good film. I'm not knocking it. I'm saying I don't know if it's a cool film. I think it's like this really deep, dark, gritty, grimy film.
It's a grimy film, yeah. But it played on the MTV circuit, man. Like these kids loved this movie. Like it was marketed like that. He even won an MTV award for it, right?
Doesn't surprise me.
I know.
It's got appeal across the board. I mean, serial killers are fascinating for just about anybody.
That's right.
Anyone who runs a true crime podcast.
Exactly. People love that shit.
But like beyond that, it had, I would say, career-making performances. I mean, Brad Pitt was already big, right?
He was
big
in
before this film. When was Driving Miss Daisy? Like late early 90s, 1991. So Morgan Freeman was on the radar, don't get me wrong, but it feels like this film elevated both of them into the next level stratosphere.
See, it feels like Morgan Freeman was famous forever, so to me it's like, oh, they got a coup, they got him in this movie. But no, he probably wasn't that big back then.
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong on that, and I'm sure you can pick out other big films he was in, but it's after this film for me for the next 15 years, 10, 15 years or so, that Morgan Freeman is a real name.
True. And you know what? This is definitely where Gwynnie came out. Now, sure, she was dating Brad Pitt at the time and all that sort of thing.
I care less about her goop. But
Goop. Yeah, let's not talk about that. But
and of course, before he became persona non grata, this film and Usual Suspects are what elevated Spacey into the stratosphere.
Well,
Usual Suspects was before this, so they have Spacey pop up as the villain.
That was the fucking stroke because at the time, and it's so hard, easy to forget now, rather. But
well, you couldn't do it now.
No, well, exactly. Now, like, all of a sudden, at the end, like this bad guy, we didn't know. I didn't know Kevin Spacey was in the movie, and then he turned up, and
he's not even in the opening credits.
That's right. We didn't even like the because of the Usual Suspects. Well, it's that guy, and then it became even bigger. And then the thing with the what's in the box and all that sort of shit—that is a ending.
One of the best endings from that level, which is to say, we didn't have the nice heroic moment.
Well,
he didn't rise above it. Rage. He did get wrath. The 7 Deadly Sins killer got his way.
Absolutely. And interestingly, the box wasn't even supposed to be in the movie.
Oh, right.
I read this, okay? The studio asked for a revision on the script by Fincher, and he was accidentally given an old draft to read which had that box ending in. The studio never...
Well, how was it going to be ending?
I don't know, but there was none of that box
ending. So he was somehow going to kill Spacey's character without the motivation of his girlfriend's head in the box, pregnant girlfriend's head in the box.
Yeah, possibly. I'm gonna actually now research it because I want to know too. But yeah, but it was actually Fincher who insisted on the box ending. He said that's how you end the movie. So boom. So that's what happened. But and it was really because that's why people remember the movie now. What's in the box? Come on.
Oh, for sure. That's probably the most famous moment in the film. But I think that there's a two. Guided by Fincher, which is, again, in a second, we're probably not emphasizing this enough. We're talking about the films. We're not talking about the direction behind them.
True.
I mean, These are all stunning achievements because someone, particularly in Fincher's case, who came off the awful experience of Alien 3 that he had, and you know, he's never had anything to do with the film ever since. He just shuns it completely.
Yeah.
He came back and did this and elicited these performances from Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, which are next level. I mean, the script's very, very good as well.
And
it needs to be, but I don't know, it's lightning in a bottle. All these things came together for a great film.
It's more that also you
probably just won the list today with that pick.
Well, I don't know. He's my favorite director. Remember the top director? He's my favorite. So there you are. Okay.
All right. Well, my number 6 then is stunned me. This was his second film as well. Like, and the higher we go on this list, the more stunning it becomes to me that these are second films.
Yeah.
This is Alien, as directed by Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Can you believe this was his second film?
I only found that out because of researching this show. But yes.
Behind a 77 film called The Duelist, which I've never seen, have no idea what it's about. But like, stunning to think that a guy had such a command of atmosphere and pacing. Like the first half of this film, it's a 70s film. Generally speaking, 70s films are slow. Like there's a general sweeping statement, I know, but watch any film from the 70s and compare it to a film from the 80s, and generally speaking, you have to work harder to get to the payoff. But it's the production design, it's the effort that went into that. It's just incredible, the use of practical effects. And it's, I mean, I don't know why there are chains hanging from a fucking ceiling in a spaceship. Don't ask me why that is, but it adds something to it. Like every decision seemed to work in this film's favor. Of course, we get one of the most iconic film scenes in movie history. I would
argue. Chestburster.
The chestburster coming out of John Hurt's chest. But beyond that, just the also to make Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, the hero of the film.
Yeah.
Rather than go to Tom Skerritt route as Dallas. Like, even that's kind of, and that's probably not Ridley Scott's call. I can't remember if that was in the original script.
It's like such a good call, though.
But for him to obviously be in charge of all that, that's...
Ridley Scott, to me, back when this, even like in like the 90s, I remember thinking to myself, he was known as the atmospheric director. So he did Black Rain back when I was in high school in that Michael Douglas movie. Yep.
Late 80s or 1990?
Maybe? Yeah.
Maybe 89.
We saw it for Japanese class, and then I remember the teacher was Honto? Saying, Conte. Why didn't I see it coming? I don't know why. Anyway... she said that he is. This is exactly what Tokyo feels like. So his shit and that has all been happened.
Obviously, like, a lot changed because I don't remember Tokyo feeling like that 24
really?
Years
there
later.
There was no guys on katanas and motorcycles? And
not that I saw.
Well, you were in the Shinjuku. I don't know.
I was in Shinjuku.
Is that when it happened? I wonder if it did. I'm not sure.
I'm sure that's where everything happens in Japanese films.
True. Yeah, so very cool. Yeah, nice work.
All right. That's my six. Over to you for yours.
Oh, well, my six is the Avengers. Sorry.
Oh, so there you are. Slight low.
Slightly low.
All right, I wonder how many crossovers we'll have in the top half.
One would think it's at least three.
I've got, I reckon, 2 to 3.
2 to 3. Okay.
Let's see. 2. I don't think my 5 will be on your list. My number 5 is Christopher Nolan's Memento.
Ha. No, it is on my list.
Oh, okay.
But I will tell you this, all right?
We have 3.
We had kind of like, I had this, it was out, then it was in, then it was out, then it was in, man.
But
like,
it got all the way to 5?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, higher than 5?
That's how my fucking brain works. Like, this one is there, but I don't like it, so it's going out. But you know what? If it has to swap back in, it goes here. I don't know. It's weird. But yes, Memento is the tits, and I would never have known about this film if Paul had not put me onto it. See, Christopher Nolan, what did he do first?
It's a film called Following, which I never
saw. Okay, no one ever saw, right? So, as far as we knew, this was his first film, right? Mm-hmm. Guy Pearce, Aussie dude, fair enough. Paul brought me along to this movie and said, I've heard this is interesting. The movie's in reverse. And I said, sign me up, Paul.
And
sign me up.
And I was wrong because it's not in reverse. It's partially in reverse.
Because it goes backward, 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 then forward. Then
what does it do? The film ends in the middle. In effect.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Wait a minute.
No, I've said that now. It's a bold statement.
Wait a minute. No, at the end.
So the black and white.
Oh, yes. No, because the end is a flashback and it shows you where he got
to. The black and white.
You're right.
Yeah. I realize I haven't watched this movie in like 10 years. So
yeah, I remember.
I'm batting out and I'm happy to be wrong. Please correct me. But anyway,
isn't that cool?
It's messing with time.
Totally.
It's about a guy who has antegrade amnesia, so he can't make new memories, right?
Yep.
So he has to mark his body with whatever, with
tattoos, man.
Tattoos to remind himself, don't trust this guy, don't do this, whatever.
He has to tattoo that shit on himself.
And then in the background, we see the events which unfolded that he made himself tattoo himself in those ways, even though. Then without those memories, because he had this big accident where his wife was murdered and mm-hmm. blood, or accident, someone clocked him across the head where his wife was murdered.
And he's been hunting for her killer.
He's been hunting for her killer. And he eventually draws a conclusion and the film ends in the way that it ends. It's fascinating.
Completely fascinating. And now that I think about it, after you see Tenet with the red and the blue coding for forward and backwards mm-hmm. and stuff, Christopher Nolan was still doing that back then. With all of the, you know, if he's in a suit, then you know that this is the forward time. He's giving out, you know, little cues. And that's just cool, man. That's like, for that to be his second film, like you said, shit. So, you know.
I just realize now the film doesn't end with the middle part, but the film ends with something which is informed what happens in the middle. So we've got two different timelines that are marching forward.
No, it ends with a flashback.
But as to what
But it's at the
happened.
End of the movie. Yeah.
Which what just happened puts it into context.
Yes, because it starts like that as well. Very weird, but very
cool. Got there in the end, but...
if you haven't seen it and you're not put off by a weird thing, you should totally check it out.
No, it's 20 years old. You've seen it if you're interested because...
No, I don't ascribe to that. Sometimes you don't see a movie for 20 years because you never heard about it because you weren't in those circles.
Everyone's heard of Christopher
Nolan. But it
turns
out... Yeah, that's true. But life gets in the way.
Yeah, I have zero doubt there are some little... hidden gems that we talk about people haven't come across their radar, but these big ones like this or the ones from big directors,
I think
that 99% of people on this podcast have heard of this film.
Anyway, go see it if you haven't seen it.
Yep. All right. Over to you.
My number 5 was Zack Snyder's 300.
Yeah, it was totally in my list. And that's when I went, no, Wayne will have this one. I'm putting it out.
And that's what I do to my list as well, because I'm like, oh, Paul's going to have this one, which he's totally going to have, and it won't be on my list. So there you are. Okay. Excellent. Yo. I was thinking the other day that Zack Snyder is actually the anti-Bay. You see...
How do you mean to?
Well, Michael Bay puts a billion cuts into everything and you can barely follow it because it's like... all that sort of shit, right? Zack Snyder, he's the guy who's slow-motioning in and out of fight scenes and slowing everything down. He's not cutting in your face. What he is doing is showing you everything, but zooming in and out. We're talking about this scene where Leonidas is leading the dudes and it's a pan shot and he takes out motherfuckers and the camera zooms in, out, slows back this, but it's spectacular.
It is.
Okay? This whole movie.
And the first time I'd seen anything like that.
Absolutely. And forget the fact that the entire movie is lit and is like a Da Vinci painting looking kind of.
That's a nice way of putting it. This is, at the time, the closest thing I'd seen to a comic book brought to life.
Agree.
And that trailer is...
But like a painted, hand-painted comic book.
Stunning trailer with some incredible imagery, which is then looks as good on the big screen. It's fun. And the story of just 300 warriors trying to hold a pass against an army of a million, that alone just gets my juices flowing, man.
Man, the Frank Miller novel, if you ever read that thing, first of all, he can't draw. But secondly...
that should be part of a countdown bingo. For sure. Every time Wayne mentions fucking Frank Miller, he has to mention.
Go look at his graphic novels. He seriously looks like shit. I'm sorry for anyone who loves him. Anyway, there's a lot of cocks in it. And David Wenham was supposed to be in the beginning.
Is that where you saw 12 of your 15 cocks?
No, this is a real cock. So anyway, but yes, no, it's a fantastic story and it's very gritty and it's a bit bloody horrible at times, I will say. But yes, I've always adored this movie.
Lovely choice. Well played, sir. My number four, get into the business end of things.
Oh, business, mate.
It's from a little guy who made it big because he loves feet. Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, so this is... All right, so to Paul...
Because, okay. Yeah, go on. Explain myself a little bit here, four might seem low to the connoisseurs out there. You know, the film which everyone thinks should have won the best picture that year, basically, from 1994.
Want to give us the Shakespeare in Love?
No, that was against... Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, that's right.
I can't remember what the travesty was for this particular year, but it was a travesty. I will totally agree. Which film has influenced popular culture and filmmaking more than in 1994 than Pulp Fiction? Nothing. Quite simply, nothing.
I don't think it's hyperbole to say, like you said, this changed the face of cinema because people started making movies like this after Pulp Fiction. And you started seeing sort of tones like this.
Oh, so to this day, people will describe a film as, it's Pulp Fiction in blood.
Absolutely.
Or it's Pulp Fiction-esque or whatever else. Like, it's incredible the influence that it's had. And from a second-time filmmaker, now he'd written other scripts, including True Romance, but the reason probably why it slips a little on my list is because of how strong my three are, my top three, but because of my love for them. Not necessarily their better films, but my love for them, and that's what we're ranking here.
Yeah, that's fine.
But also because I love Reservoir Dogs so much.
Yeah.
Right. So as much as Pulp Fiction is a fantastic film and I really, really dig it.
You like Reservoir Dogs more,
Reservoir
don't you?
Dogs is my preferred
really?
Film.
Really? First film.
Those two films, if you had them right there in front of me and said, watch one right now, I mean, unless I've watched Reservoir Dogs twice in the last few weeks, I'm always going to choose Reservoir Dogs.
You know, I think Tarantino was, I'm sure you've seen this, but his interview, he was saying that when he went to do Reservoir Dogs, he saw all these trailers and he's like, oh, all I have to do is direct. I don't have to keep buying chickens so people will stay here so I can film them. Because he's used to all of his cheap movies that he made with his friends. And he said that's what made him... It's just kind of cool that he's literally like our stupid asses, kind of. And got
and he
produced that.
Influential filmmakers of all time.
Easily.
Because his script writing is so excellent. So amazing. And arguably, he's become a bit more indulgent in his latter years and maybe some of his
films. But people still love him, man.
Yeah, and so do I. We've done the top 10 directors. He's right up there for me. He's not my one or two or three, but he's definitely in my top five.
No, he's always on the game.
In every film. And I hope he does more than one more film. It'll be a real tragedy if he keeps his word and retires after one more cinematic release. That would be... I mean, go away, have a few years off, do whatever you want to do.
He does that anyway.
But I hope he comes back in when he's a little bit of an older man, maybe in his 60s or whatever, and makes a few more films because his voice is one I like. I mean, yes, I could do without some of his more controversial elements, particularly his affection for a particular word.
But he's writing a script. Okay, whatever.
I know you don't truck with that, but for me, I understand how it's sensitive. I have no problem with the violence and the ridiculousness of that because that just offends people who are squeamish. But
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think he'll ever do... Because remember how there was that talk of him doing Star Trek?
Still bubbles around.
I still hear that story.
I can't imagine that being his 10th and final film.
No way. And I can't imagine he'll do a sequel either.
No, I don't think so.
I hope he doesn't do another fucking... Western.
Well, what I like about Tarantino is he seems quite prepared to... I mean, largely it comes back to crime. Virtually the common element to almost all of his films is there's a criminal sort of subclass or element to it.
Totally.
I'd love to see him do a horror movie.
Have you heard... on YouTube, there's a video of him talking about Dunkirk. And how he says
Dunkirk.
Yes, and
Also another suburb.
I don't know why this is happening.
Callback.
He says that it's the best movie that was ever made. And I was like, what? So he says, well, you should do that because you like it too.
Yeah, I do like it. I don't think I like it that much. And
I know.
But what I did say after we reviewed Tenet, I should go back and check out Dunkirk again. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. All right, that's my four. Let's hear what's yours.
Nice one. My number four is an easy one for me to forget how game-changing this film was. It's The Matrix.
Yeah.
No. Ooh, I thought it'd be up your date place. Dude. I oh, that it was Paul's improv guitar riff. To Paul, that's what a challenge sounds like. Oh shit. Righto. So The Matrix, right? Like, so I mean, I'm sure Paul has a lot to say about this, but I think still Keanu Reeves could not act in this film. Right? Again, this is before Street Kings. He did not learn to act yet. He was just doing. Yes, motherfucker. I say that.
How dare you?
Listen, man. He was still Johnny Utah in this movie. Whoa. All right. He was exactly that.
He was.
Whoa. Hold on.
Is that Ken Reeves?
Yes.
Well, you're a cunt.
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
But let's talk about the directors here. So the Wachowskis.
Siblings now.
So they called you? Yeah. Okay, good.
I think actually we can move to saying the Wachowski sisters because they both transitioned.
They're gone away? Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So these two ladies actually did Bound first.
Yeah.
That
great
the,
film.
The lesbian mafia film, mm-hmm. which is really good. But
I mean, mafia is a strong word. The lesbian crime film
to do with
an organized mob boss.
Yeah, okay, organized. Yeah, there you go. Now, with that film there, now, did you tell me that they did that to prove they could make The Matrix? Or was it that, like, that was just the first deal they had?
Well, no, I think they'd written the Matrix basic script and they wanted to direct it. And they said, no. And so they gave them a deal to shoot a much cheaper film, and which they also wrote, because they also wrote Bound, and to say, if you can deliver on this, we'll give you a bash.
Wow.
And they did.
I wonder what it's like.
I think that's how it goes.
If you're like a duo of directing, so like the Coen brothers, the Wachowski people, the whatever, you know, like, how does that paycheck work? Because now it's getting your two minds. Is it a more expensive film? You would think, though, if you're like...
It's a good question.
Lord
the,
and Miller.
The Hughes brothers, guys who did Menace to Society.
Yes, yes.
Dead Presidents, From Hell.
Yeah, all of those folks. And so I think it's kind of cool. And, you know, who are the guys who did?
I would imagine the Coen brothers just get, they get the they same get, amount.
That's one of the, I think you have to get to get, like, who are the guys who did Avengers again?
Russos.
Russos, okay. So those guys, it doesn't really matter what you pay them because there's more money than you have in the world.
So we were told by a friend of yours who's in the industry, standard directorial fee, 10% of the budget. So if your film is worth $300 million, you get paid $30 million of that. If your film is worth $1 million, you get paid $100,000.
Is that how it works?
That's what he said, is standard.
Wow. Okay, shit. So Avengers.
Yeah, now obviously, but depending on who you are as a director, you can command higher and lower, the same as you can negotiate any price on any job.
Same with an actor too.
But as a baseline, 10%.
Very. Wow, okay, that's cool. But that means that they would have, you know, if one guy did it, he'd have gotten all the 30.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Do they therefore take 5% each?
Exactly.
Is it we now have to give the budget, we need 110% of the budget because we got to pay two people 10%.
And I'd say at Avengers level, it kind of goes that way.
Oh, for sure.
So, you would think so. This guy, yeah, we need 30 mil each. Nice. Anyway, there you are.
Very nice choice. Obviously, I 100% agree. The Matrix was your number
That's right.
four.
Yes.
My number four, well, I've done my number four, but the reason why The Matrix is here for me is we've talked about game changers. We talked about things that have influenced cinema. The Matrix redefined sci-fi, this is one of the only films I've ever seen where you walk out of it and go, I could look at my world differently. I wonder. A little bit like The Truman Show did. Ooh, I wonder what
What
they'd be like if the whole world, because this is, it's world-changing. Obviously, it's not true. I'm not trying to say for a second, but you have moments of, wouldn't that be, how would I know if I was in The Matrix?
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing feat for a film to accomplish. In the same way that if a comedy is still making you laugh later on after seeing it, you still think back.
I do it all the time.
Yeah, that or drama really makes you think about your position in the world, or a horror film makes you turn the lights on as you go down when you get home, when you get into your house. Shut up. But this film made me consider the universe, my world around me, and that's powerful enough. I disagree. Look, I think Keanu Reeves was perfectly cast because he was clueless in the film and he's meant to be stunned through most of it. But when he actually becomes the one, I think he does that well.
I mean, he's fine. You know, Street King's fine. Like, he was okay.
You would fucking Street
I'm telling you, man, the performance in that thing was fucking Oscar worthy.
I'm telling you, man.
Well, apparently there's a small group of people who don't agree with you. The fucking Academy, because he wasn't nominated.
We never agree, Paul. We never agree. Okay.
Anyway, that's why I love The Matrix. We'll get that.
Look, let's just say Bullet Time, okay? Is very nice, but Bullet Time is what fucking nailed it in history. Like, yep. Boom. So there you are.
And still, to this day, again, you see films copying that, redefining that.
Can you imagine someone putting that in their film now?
Hold your horses, because not next year, I think the year after, The Matrix 4 now, after, thanks COVID, pushing things back.
There's just no
way. It should be dead in the water to me.
It is dead in the water.
After the third one, which is a fucking travesty of a film. It's,
you know why?
Fucking so far stuck up its own ass.
It's got its own IP. It's got guaranteed income, kind of.
I hope the Wachowskis have taken this on board and they've gone, all right, we see where we fucked up in the third one. Let's give people what they want, like the first one again. So I'm prepared to give them a chance.
So here's what happens, right? They do a new rig for like the fucking Bullet Time.
Good.
Except now it's 360. Yep. It's not just around, all right? And then I don't know how they use that, though, because you have to somehow make it a hologram. I don't know. Anyway.
That'll work for me. I'll be fine if they do a Bullet Time.
They'll need to do something to one up that shit.
I'm less interested in that, though. I am in delivering a story which is engaging again and is internally consistent and isn't so far about the wank of the philosophical nature of things that I don't give a shit.
I wouldn't hold your breath, mate, just quietly. All right, fair enough.
All right, my number three is Predator. John McTiernan's second film after Nomads with Pierce Brosnan.
Shit, was Predator the second movie? Yeah. I didn't know that!
I know!
Holy shit!
Predator and...
was his second film! Yep. What was the first one?
Nomads.
Nomads, never saw it.
Yeah, it's a kind of pseudo-horror film.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, I'm pretty impressed.
This film is a stunning achievement for a second
fucking
film.
Shit. And it was...
it is the greatest testosterone-fueled action film, as far as I'm concerned, of all time. Like, Die Hard is much more nuanced to my mind.
No, this is just swinging their fucking hogs around.
Swinging their guns around and being picked off one by one, which is my favorite horror trope, like the survival horror of... it's kill off the cast one at a time.
This is Paul's jam, by the way.
This is absolutely my jam. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, again, the greatest action hero of the 80s, probably the 90s as well. Leading the cast. It's fantastic. Special effects are stunning for its time. And it fucking holds up, man. I've never watched this film and ever been disappointed. And I've seen this film at least 25 times.
I remember this movie. I remember the Commodore 64 game I played about it. I remember all that shit, man. And like, I think we were talking about the production. Like, a lot of shit went wrong in the production and stuff. It shouldn't have kind of turned out this way. But because they used the camera the way they did and fucking made it just this good, it became the shit, and that's why we're still talking about it.
Great script, great lines of dialogue, great characters.
What
year? The secondary characters, 87.
87!
It's the secondary characters that really make this film sing. You know, the Max and the Blaines and the...
Totally.
You know, oh man, you've been hit. You're bleeding. I ain't got time to bleed. I mean, shit like that.
That's all good shit. And also, what's his name?
Shane Black.
Yep. I still remember all that stuff. Oh, you know what I really remember? I remember him jumping into the water to get rid of the mud. And it was all that beautiful blue ass. Like somehow he was in some tropical ass. It was like this nice gap in all the horribleness. Like, oh, look at that. And then it goes horrible again. Really cool.
The Alan Silvestri score. I mean, all these elements come together. But if you don't have a director who's seemingly amazing beyond his years. I mean, Die Hard's the next year after this.
Is it really?
John McTiernan as well.
And he killed it. What did he do after that?
Ooh.
Did you do a bunch of other stuff?
Yeah, he did a couple other films off the top of my head. I should have it in my mind. Oh, of course, Die Hard with a Vengeance he did as well.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, not
two.
Yeah, that was Rennie Harlan.
Huh.
And to my mind, they're the two best Die Hard films by a long way. I know you have an affection for number two.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why. Nice one.
So yeah, that's John McTiernan, Predator.
Good call. My number three, Snatch. It's Snatch.
Yeah, it's on my honorable mentions.
So let's talk about this now, okay? So
chopped off.
I love Guy Ritchie.
One, because I knew it'd be on your list too, because I just couldn't say it was a better film than Terminator.
I completely understand. But for me, I remember watching this movie with my little sister, and we watched the whole movie at home, and when it stopped with the plane thing and the fucking throwing the drink back thing, and then the end, she just goes, "That is such a good movie." And we'd seen it like two or three times before.
Mm-hmm.
She was just and it was just boom. It's so undeniably wicked. And I remember seeing that Brad Pitt was like, he was paid very little to go on this show, and because he just wanted, because he saw Lock, Stock, he liked Guy Ritchie.
How cool is that?
Very cool. That's what even made it better. It's like, Jesus.
That's what I'm saying. At this stage, this is only, 3 years after Seven.
Mm.
Brad Pitt could do that. Hey, love your film. Want to be in it. Shit, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll do anything. All right. How about you play an Irish boxer who no one can understand. give it a bash.
I know. And how about you look like shit and all that sort of stuff, you know, have a weird thing and adopt an accent.
But you win in the end. Okay, I'll go.
I reckon he would have been fine to dying in the end. He's just like, I just want to work with this guy so I can do that because I'm Brad Pitt. Boom, right? And they even were trying to limit his time on set because he knew he was an exporting actor and that kind of, it was really, really cool. So I like the fact that, and you know, it's a Guy Ritchie movie. You all know what Snatch is, but I've always loved it. Yeah, I still love
but
it.
But with a very... Don't forget the visual flair that Ritchie had in those early films.
Now, thinking about that, right? So with all the slow-mo and then the fast frames and the losing frames and stuff like that, he doesn't do that anymore because it's become cliche.
There's a bit of it in The Gentleman, but nowhere near as much.
But even that is like a version of that. Like I love The Gentleman.
You've got to evolve.
Yeah, because if you're doing the same thing every single time, people, that's actually so starkly him that you would get used to it. And that's why I'm glad that he did. Like, I love fucking Henry Cavill.
The Man from Uncle. Bland is what
that
film should be called.
That movie has a ton of heart and it doesn't have any of his Guy Ritchie flourishes, but it's fucking the shit. This guy's versatile. He's back.
Well, would you say, he did Aladdin?
Yeah, see, now he can do Aladdin, which is basically nothing like his style. It looked good, that movie. I don't love it.
What about, he also did the King Arthur movie?
Look, the King Arthur movie was a misstep, but it wasn't as bad. Like, Revolver was when he's in the shit.
Oh,
Revolver was like, that's when garbage. He was just on his ass. Yep. Swept away. Anyway, yeah.
First, take a big step back and literally
fine
fuck
now.
Your own face.
Fine now.
Now, that was back then. That was the Revolver, sort of Guy Ritchie being, you know, hit with a strap on from Madonna type years. So,
you know, no knock until you tried it.
Get leave my goddamn blue haired women.
I don't like them.
No one in the world understood that quote except you and me.
It's from Basic Instinct. Yes.
I was going to say, no. I was going to ask a question. I was going to say, countdown pack to anyone who knows where that quote is from. Okay. My number two is Here on a Technicality, and I searched high and low. I read the entire Wikipedia page.
So your people went onto it, and they came back with?
My number two is Shaun of the Dead, which I always thought was his first. Yes, Edgar Wright's first feature film, but no. A Fistful of Fingers from 1995, which got a cinematic release in one cinema at a famous cinema, which I can't remember the name of, in London.
Okay.
So it got good enough to get released there.
That's legit.
It counts. And I'm like, oh my God, Shaun of the Dead counts. Yes.
I knew, if I was like a betting man like yourself, and I would have known this was, actually
No one's shocked who listens to the show regularly. But if you're not someone who listens to the show regularly, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Yes.
Shaun of the Dead is one of the greatest horror comedies ever made. It is so intelligent. It has so many jokes packed in per minute. They're not, generally speaking, hold your belly, fall on the floor, rolling around laughing jokes, but they're, if you know the genre.
I actually did laugh at
this. Other than the characters, which have their own humor built in, and you don't need to assume, but there are so many jokes in jokes for horror fans, particularly about zombie films. I mean, even his mum's name is Barbara, who's one of the iconic characters from Night of the Living Dead, the first zombie film.
See, that sailed right over my head, but I liked it anyway. So, there's plenty for everyone, right?
This is a rarity for me.
It's rich.
It's a 5-star film. I've done only like 13 or 14 in my life that I would give 5 stars to. I love this film with every fiber of my being, and I can almost not fault it.
What's Nick Frost doing these days?
He's in lots of
bits little
pieces.
Things. Yeah, yeah.
Normally, he's cameoing in whatever films and the like. But I mean, yes, you have the Sean Pegg and Nick Frost combo, which is fantastic. But I think for me, it's Edgar Wright's kinetic visual filming, which he is an auteur. He has a style.
He's the shit.
His own,
no doubt.
That he varies it from bits and pieces, but I'm so excited about Last Night in Soho, his next film, which was meant to be out about now, but has been pushed to somewhere next year, March or April, because of COVID.
Question for you. Better film, Shaun of the Dead, Baby Driver?
Shaun of the Dead.
Fuck off.
Yep.
Fuck off.
Again, put the two alongside each other. I love Baby Driver. It's fantastic, but which one speaks to me?
Oh, yeah, no. Your favorite is Shaun of the Dead, but it's maybe not a better film. Come on now.
I don't think so.
Dude. The amount of depth in that film with all the
script of Shaun of the Dead is infinitely better than Baby Driver. Baby Driver's script is where it labors. The filmmaking in Baby Driver is a step above Shaun of the Dead, I would say. But at the end of that film, Baby Driver is a real letdown, whereas the end of Shaun of the Dead is earned and perfect.
What? Letdown? Yeah. Baby Driver?
Yes. Do you not remember how
that
comes?
Yeah, I remember how it ended.
Where he gets caught, goes to jail, and then we're just like...
The very, very end. Yes. I thought you meant the John Hamm part. No, okay. No.
It's a real pop-out.
Come on, man. That movie's so... Anyway, okay. All right, cool. Let's want to know. Very good to know.
All right, that's my number two.
Cool.
Shaun of the Dead.
This is a bit boring, but my two and one have been mentioned. Two is Memento, man. That's where I put it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, I'm impressed.
You know what was going to be here? Trainspotting. Sorry.
Wow, you love it that much?
But
hang on. It was going to be here. It didn't make your list?
Yes. See, that's how my brain
Please
works.
Explain.
It just got swapped out, clean swapped out. It didn't get pushed down. It didn't get pushed down like it would with you, because then I'd have to kick off my number 10, which I really liked. So you see...
Well, then put your 10 higher.
No. It doesn't work like that. The list has a tone. The list has a mood. It's called
you
production.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
As I said,
poor train spotting. That's all I've got to say.
It's called producing a show. I'm creating a list that's the most interesting to listen to.
Oh, right. So you give me opportunities to use a soundboard. That's good of you.
No, fuckface. I know you're going to have something on there. For example, I know one that's going to be on your fucking list.
If you haven't heard it, you're not going to know it because I've already revealed my number one as well.
Really?
Yeah. So let's give us. I'll give you mine then. 10 through 2.
You're trying to tell me Jaws ain't on your list?
No, and I'll explain why in a second.
All right.
Number 10, The Terminator from James Cameron. 9, The Descent from Neil Marshall. 8, Ryan Coogler's Creed. 7, Joss Whedon's The Avengers. 6, Ridley Scott's Alien. 5, from Christopher Nolan, Memento. Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction is at number 4. For number 3 is John McTiernan's Predator. Number 2, Edgar Wright's Shaun of the Dead. And my number 1 is the Wachowski siblings, sisters, The Matrix.
Aha. Yes, of course. I mean, I figured that when you said it to me. So, okay, nice one.
Obviously, the way I spoke about how it changed, not changed my view of the world, but made me think about the world in a different way. That's cinema at its most powerful.
I get it. Fair enough. No, I know you love that shit.
Give us your rundown.
Okay, 10 is The Breakfast Club, John Hughes. 9, Sofia Coppola, Lost in Translation. 8, Paul Thomas Anderson, Boogie Nights. 7, David Fincher. 6, Joss Whedon, The Avengers. 5, Zack Snyder's 300. 4, The Wachowski Sisters, Matrix. Snatch at number 3, Guy Ritchie. 2, Memento. And my number 1 was Pulp Fiction.
Oh, wow.
That's where I got to.
Number 1.
Because I just couldn't get past it in my head. I'm like,
no,
that's
fine.
Yeah,
fine. So. Again, I think if I look at the popular vote for this week, I reckon your list is closer to that. Mm. More power to you. That's absolutely fine. Why is Jaws not on my list? Because it's actually, according to Wikipedia, it's his third film he made.
So 1941.
Number 1 was Jewel.
Jewel.
Right, which was a TV film. Then there's a film called The Sugarland Express, which I've never even fucking heard of before, from 1974.
Hmm.
And then Jaws at 1975. So we have a shit ton of listener feedback, which we're about to hear, which mentioned Jaws. But because everyone knows Jewel and everyone knows Jaws, but no one knows The Sugarland Express. And then according to David Powell, patron extraordinaire, good friend to the show, he said there's also another couple on IMDb, which are predate... They're in the middle of Jewel and Sugarland Express. So
which one was 1941?
They're all other TV movies. 1941 is like in 1981. It's way later.
So it's later. I thought that was before Jaws.
No, it's way later.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go. That's why Jaws cannot be on this list. Desperado can't be on this list because Robert Rodriguez directed El Mariachi and a film called Road Games.
Was that released though?
Yes. It was a TV film. Again, released.
Oh, but it was a TV film in like some telenovela in fucking Mexico.
It's in English.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yep. Okay, hang on. It doesn't matter. It's still a TV film.
No,
film.
I don't think it counts. You're talking about Hollywood films, motherfucker.
No, where does it say top 10 sophomore films by Hollywood director?
If you directed a movie now, are you counting The Family and Reap?
No, The Family is a short film. But if I directed another film, then that could be up for grabs.
Oh, piss off.
Sorry for the new list of the show. We are referencing some films that Wayne and I made when we were much younger.
Yeah, and they're shit.
Yes, they are. Absolutely, they are. All right, that's Alice. Honorable mentions really quickly.
Really quickly, Johnny Dangerously.
What?
I liked that movie, man. Amy Heckerling. It's good. It's a good show. Michael Keaton, man. It's actually really funny. I liked it, okay. Singles by Cameron Crowe.
Yeah.
And I had the other ones that you mentioned. So there you are.
Yeah, the only ones that you haven't mentioned that I want to mention here, give a shout out to, are Star Trek, I think, from J.J. Abrams, 2009. I thought that would be on your list.
The second film.
Yeah, behind Mission Impossible 3.
Tits.
Now, I didn't do the check on that, so I could be wrong.
Tits.
Yeah. Honestly, shopped it out because that's definitely on Wayne's list.
Oh, whoops. Fuck.
Yeah.
Man, I've worked my ass off for this list. Sorry.
Midsommar from Ari Aster after Hereditary. Right. And I really wanted that on my list. And then the other one is Requiem for a Dream from Darren Aronofsky. The only one of his films I really liked.
Aronofsky. Fair enough. Nice.
That's our list. What about yours? Let's hear that in the last segment of the show that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with a different representative from the So Wizard podcast, Marky Mark Ellis Regans, rather than Joey, who's a good friend to the show. Marky Mark said number 3, Creed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Number 2, Pulp Fiction. There it is.
John, there it is.
Number 1, Marvel's The Avengers.
Woo!
Very nice pick there. And he also pointed out Memento and Star Trek 2009, which made me go, oh my God, fucking Star Trek. I could have done that one.
Damn it.
Billy from We Watch The Thing is a great topic, and he had a very different take. on a couple of his choices. Number three, The Town. Affleck proving that Gone Baby Gone wasn't just a fluke and that he has some serious directorial chops.
Have you seen Gone Baby Gone?
Yes, but a long time ago.
Did you think it was good? Do you remember?
I do remember thinking it was good.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
Yep.
Yeah, cool.
Number two, Alien. This could also be substituted for Jaws. Nope, technically it couldn't, Billy. So Alien, right choice. And number one, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. One of the best films ever made, period. The direction by Michel Gondry is top notch.
Fair enough. Loved it.
Well played there, Billy. Sam, of course, Sam Hurley from Movies and 20Q's podcast. Great mate to the show. Patron as well. He gave his top 10, so I'm just going to give the three to be fair. Number three, Boy from Taika Waititi.
Mm.
Number two, Shaun of the Dead from Edgar Wright. And number one, Pulp Fiction. There you are, Wayne.
Boom.
From QT himself. The J Movie Talk podcast had Desperado from Robert Rodriguez, so obviously not realizing Road Crimes, whatever the hell it was called.
Yeah.
Snatch from Guy Ritchie and Creed from Ryan Coogler.
Boom.
Stephen from the Super Retro Throwback podcast, Assault on Precinct 13 from John Carpenter.
Oh, really? Oh, the old one, though. The old,
yeah, the very old, yeah, one, yeah, 1976, yeah, yeah, one. American Graffiti from George Lucas. That was his second film, apparently. I always thought it was his first, but so there you go. And Predator from John McTiernan.
There
nice
it
choice
is.
There, Stephen. Under the Great Lakes podcast, first time contributor to the show. Breakfast Club, there you are, Wayne.
Whoa!
Midsommar and Pulp Fiction again. So we're starting to get some frequency here. Philip Meany over in the Facebook listener community had Spielberg for Jaws. Well, we ruled that one out. Fincher for Seven. And Spike Jonze for Adaptation after
have you
being
seen that?
John Malkovich. Yeah, I have watched it last year.
Is it good?
Yes. It's a good film. Yep, Spike Jonze. I enjoyed it.
All right.
Thomas Hall had Creed, Pulp Fiction, and Shaun of the Dead.
Nice.
John Hislander had Alien from Ridley Scott, Transporting.
There it is.
From Danny Boyle. And David Fincher's Celebrate Youth, the Rick Springfield video. Mean Seven.
Rick Springfield was good.
David Powell had Memento, Seven, and Pulp Fiction. They're obviously going to be in discussion. So he went a little off the beaten track and said Trainspotting, Alien, and Repulsion from Roman Polanski.
Do you know that one?
No, I don't think I've seen it. I've seen images with hands coming out of the walls down a hallway and
you.
Shit like that. Blake Jarvis, another patron to the show. Predator, John McTiernan. The Usual Suspects from Bryan Singer.
Is it? No.
Yeah, he did something called, something about satellite or some cable show or whatever.
Yeah, After Hours or something. I can't remember.
Yeah,
something like that.
So, very, well,
shit.
Well done, Blake. And again, Pulp Fiction from QT. First time contributor, Rachel Richardson said, The Terminator from James Cameron, Shaun of the Dead from Edgar Wright, and Lost in Translation. There you are.
Excellent Sophia work, Ray.
Coppola. Mark Harris had Brawl and Cell Block 99, which is from S. Craig Zahler. So that's a pretty memorable film. One of my top 10 films from a couple of years back, I believe, or 3 years back, 2017. Damn, we're getting old, man.
Oh, I remember this.
The Incredibles.
Shit, no. Really?
Yeah, it's from Brad Bird.
God damn it.
Not sure what his first film was then.
Yes.
So I'm just going to trust that Mark has done his research. And The Last Starfighter, I couldn't tell you who the director of that is because Mark didn't tell me either. And that is it for this week's Pop 10. Thank you so much to everyone who got back to us. Sorry I couldn't get through all your feedback. We really, truly do appreciate it. And Wayne, how do the listeners give us their feedback on the topic week in and week out?
Google The Countdown Podcast or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. Hit up the Facebook listener community links in the show notes. Check out ccradio.com.au for ourselves and other great Aussie podcasts. And we host through podbean.com. You can like and follow the show there. All right, that's episode 285. Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 286?
We're getting down the top 10 illogical movie scenes. Shit that didn't make sense.
That's right.
So why did that happen?
We're going to shout
out. Why are we doing that?
Bits that really shatter us. And long-term listeners to the show will know, particularly myself, really gets bent out of shape about movie inconsistencies.
Yes. Where Paul just, in particular is like, what? But this,
yeah. As you can tell, I pushed for this topic and Wayne was good enough to agree. So thank you very much for that, sir. And that should be a lot of fun to name and shame a bunch of these films that really do think scripts don't matter that much. Just go with it. Just go.
Damn right. Very good.
Looking forward to that one. And that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 295 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
I'll explain. And I'll use small
long-ass
words
bullshit
that you'll
sound.
Be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
What?
That'll do. We will catch you next week. Cheers.